The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to novelist Cynthia Kroc, author of the Ashwood Trilogy. Now, she's just released the third and final book in the series, Leaving Ashwood. Stick around. The future is just an illusion. See what I mean? It just blew past us. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media is recorded before a live studio audience full of NSA spooks who've highlighted and dog-eared the pages of each book in the Ashwood Trilogy and say a silent prayer each night to thank Cynthia Kroc for all the insight in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Wow.
I miss Ann Hartford already.
Oh.
Now, this is not a spoiler for Leaving Ashwood, Cynthia Kroc's third and final book in the Ashwood futuristic fiction trilogy. I'm just sad to see an end come to the series. I still remember reading the first book, Ashwood, and finding it a little bit of a slow starter. But about 50 pages in, the point at which I'll often put a book down and move on, the narrative caught fire, the characters grabbed me by the collar, and I couldn't put it down. Harvesting Ashwood was more of the same. Kroc created a world set sometime in the future of the United States of America when a second Great Depression has beaten down its citizens, reduced freedom of movement, discussion, and even thought to but an illusion. Corporations have a death grip on the Constitution itself. Pardon my French, but it's some scary shit. Now, in the third and final novel, Leaving Ashwood, Kroc doesn't disappoint. She takes her main and supporting characters in some surprising yet natural directions, and more details about their era and the world around them is revealed. The politics are ugly, but Ann Hartford never loses the essence of what makes her such a compelling female character. And with that, Cynthia Kroc, welcome back to Mr. Media.
Well, thank you for having me.
Always my pleasure. You know personally, because we've talked about it, I was really looking forward to the third book. But at the same time, I got to ask, is ending the trilogy, is it a happy time or a sad time for you?
Well, your comments about missing Ann Hartford, I've talked about that when I've been doing some readings and some book discussions, because you spend, 6 years of your life with this other person kind of sharing an office or moving along life. And to realize that she's now like more a part of some other people's lives than mine, kind of bittersweet. And actually, the third book I had started in Phoebe's character, and then had a fair amount of advice that was kind of breaking the commitment I'd made to my readers that this is Anne's trilogy. Mm. So it is kind of bittersweet. I'm ready to move on to some other things. But I have to say that, I keep trying to kind of push down thoughts that come up about the next book or what could happen with the kids in the story. Yeah.
Well, two things you said just now interested me, and I hope I'm not so old that I forget what the second one is. But the first one you said was that you'd been sharing an office with Anne, and I thought, wow, that's a commitment to story. I interview a lot of writers, a lot of novelists on the show, and the idea that you, in your mind, you're kind of sharing an office with her, that's a commitment, Cynthia.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know that I've ever stated it quite that clearly, but, she came to me when I was doing my MFA program. A poet named Tim Seibels was doing a set of readings one night, and he's a real kind of urban metro poet. And I came back and started writing this story about a young woman standing with all of her earthly possessions in front of this big forbidding kind of residence. And it took probably 6 months after that to really understand who she was and what was going on. And I have to say, almost since that time, I've been, you know, I did build a dramatic arc among the three, across the three stories.
Quite.
And tried to peg important kind of places developmentally in her life. But yes, she's been, you know, pretty close to me. and there's no secret. I mean, I have older children, so the fact that in the third book, she's trying to wrestle with that being a parent to adult kids is a story that's kind of close as well.
Did you write out? Did you outline the three books when you started?
No. I didn't do that, but I did have about maybe about four or five paragraphs on the second book and on the third book when I started the first book. And I knew what the themes would be, but that's about as far as I went. When I was doing the second book, I started doing kind of more storyboarding. If you know anything from the kind of creative agency world, I started doing some of that kind of storyboarding of parts of the story as the next story, as it was kind of trying to erupt while I was finishing the second book.
And the other, I remember what the other thing I was thinking was, you mentioned mm-hmm. that you had started writing the third book in Phoebe's voice as opposed
right.
to Anne's voice.
Right.
And I got to say, I'm really glad you were talked out of that. I think that would have been jarring for those of us who followed along, you know, for the first two books.
It was kind of an exercise in just having some fun as well, because she is a fairly unstable personality and not so bound by the kind of structures of the world she lives in. So that was all real fun, but it's true. I mean, Anne is the person that people were waiting to get back into a chair with for a while and read about.
This is going to sound awful, and I know people are going to hate me for saying this, but as you were describing Phoebe, you know, what her point of view would be like, I just did an interview with a fellow named Spencer Quinn, who writes Chet and Bernie mysteries, and they're set in the voice of Chet, who's a dog. And what's interesting is it's all told in Chet's voice.
Wow.
And so Chet can tell the story pretty well, except if a butterfly goes by, Chet's distracted. If Chet gets wind of a particular type of smell or sound, mm-hmm. Chet's distracted, and you lose a thread of the story. And so this is why I know I'm in trouble here. I'm not comparing Phoebe to a dog, but I'm afraid that Phoebe, because of her own mental health issues,
right.
shall we say, might have been a very tough narrative. I mean, it'd be probably
right.
a good exercise in a different setting, but I think it would have been really hard here.
I think it would have been too. You know, actually, the first book of Ashwood started as kind of a was written in kind of a poetic meter, and I abandoned that after about five or six chapters. And I thought, if it's this kind of ponderous to write it, how will it be to read it as well?
Right.
And it's not a part of this genre of the speculative fiction genre, so you have to also understand what the readers are expecting to find. But I did write, I have like a long short story. I'll have to look up these mysteries about a dog. It's written by, you know, it's in the dog's point of view about his relationship with his female owner, who's going through a time of some romantic loss. Let's put it that way. So I get it. Boy, that would be a challenge.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's done a bunch of them. It was actually his second time on the show. The first time he came on the show, the author again is Spencer Quinn, for anyone who wants to look it up. I thought, wow, he writes his books in the voice of the dog. So when I interview him, this is when we were doing audio, not video, several years ago.
Yeah.
You can see where this is going, I guess.
Yeah.
I started interviewing him on the phone as if I was interviewing Chet the dog.
Dog.
And he played along for a little while, and then he got pissed off because I didn't drop it, you know. And yeah. So years passed, and I had heard afterward that, you know, he was not happy with me. But I was surprised he agreed to come back, and he was quite nice about it. And, we talked about getting into the voice of the dog. And so anyway, mm-hmm. That's neither here nor there. I'm right. Sorry I went off.
That's okay.
So the other thing I was thinking about is that if I had created a series as rich as I think that Ashwood is, and mm-hmm. I think – I'll say it here. Maybe we'll say it again. Somebody needs to buy the rights and make this
a movie,
a miniseries. It should be like a Showtime or an AMC. Mm-hmm. So if any of those people are watching, go get these books, read them. I can't.
Thank you.
I think it would be such a rich visual treasure chest. So anyway, does it worry you at all, having created this, to then set it aside and not return, possibly not return to that world? It's so rich. It's like it's going to be kind of hard to mm-hmm. match or top. Not to scare you or anything, but
no,
nonetheless.
Well, and you know, so I'm heading off more into doing some contemporary fiction, and it's very, you know, it's our world. But I think you raise a good point. I mean, there may be that time, because I do have like a collection of speculative short stories that I've been working on. And it's a part of how I write. So will these characters show up in some short stories? Possibly. I don't know if I'll do another Ashwood, but it could be interesting to see what happens to them in 10 years mm-hmm. when the world has moved again or changed again. Yeah.
Did it ever bother you, like, as you were writing the third book? And again, I don't want to give out any spoilers. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give anything mm-hmm. away. I did read to the end of the book, which I try not to
Thank
do.
You.
I had to know. I mean, I'm two books invested. I'm two and a half books invested. It's like, oh hell, I want to know what happens.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Without giving away anything, the series has been fairly dark. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it doesn't it it's an ugly time in America. It's an ugly time in Minnesota.
Right.
It's civil liberties are in grave danger, mm-hmm. if not being extinguished daily.
Right.
Was that hard to write and keep coming back to, or was it just, hey, this is what I'm writing about?
You know, you've heard the old adage about writers doing cathartic writing to kind of deal with issues from their past. And I think I've said it before, but I think I do some writing to work out my fears of the future. And I also follow, you know, Margaret Atwood said speculative fiction deals only with things that are in today's world that logically will become something in tomorrow's world. And so sitting back and thinking about some of these things at times, yeah, it is kind of frightening, because oftentimes, you know, I'm following kind of a track of what I see in today's news or, you know, some an opinion piece that you've read, and kind of thinking, like, where might that go? And, you know, the flip side, so a part of Leaving Ashwood is about large multinational corporations becoming more powerful than the national governments. And during the time I was doing some revision work on it, University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Business sent me an invitation to their business breakfast. And the topic was about the 10 largest corporations in the world now are now like half of the largest economies of the world, if you were to compare GDP with revenues. So it's like, whoa, you know, we're already kind of partway there. But I sat back to try to think of, like, could there be good out of this? And that was a real, like, forcing yourself to try to see the other side. And so there are some parts in the book, one of the Federation for Faith and Peace, for instance, comes out of corporations saying, you know, war is really not good for our bottom line, and so we're going to make it go away. We're going to figure out how to do this and do it without diplomacy and all that kind of stuff. And we might not like how that's done, but it happens. So that's kind of a long answer to what you asked, I guess.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I've always thought that as the world grew more connected, I think a lot of people mm-hmm. maybe thought this, that you know, through the internet and the same businesses operating in multiple countries and sharing values, you know, whether it's the American direction going out or the Chinese direction coming mm-hmm. this way or you know, the French and the English have always had massive amount of influence around the world, as you know, from the early days. I always thought things would get better. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating to see that we still have wars going on.
Right.
There are still companies that are agent provocateurs, and mm-hmm. the corporate it helps in some ways, but in other ways it actually complicates things. You know, Google in China, for example.
A good example. And there, you know, the Chinese economy may soon bypass the U.S. economy for purchasing power. And how are we going to deal with some of those things? And some of it's just national pride as well as kind of power structure. I'm with you. You do kind of, you know, hold on being one of those children of the 70s that life will peace and love will rule the planet.
Peace and love, as Ringo Starr would say.
Right, yeah. Right. And instead, there's not all people are wanting the same thing. Yeah.
It seems like that instinct for war just kind of moves around. It shifts places, you know. A little solution here and then a big disruption here.
That's a part of why the main character of this is a woman also. I mean, chief protagonists in speculative fiction are not often women. So she brings a different perspective to trying to manage her way through that world.
You know, I voted today, and there were some races for judges in particular that I could not remember who I had planned to vote for. Mm-hmm. And I didn't bring a cheat sheet. So I was looking at it, and I thought, okay, when in doubt, I'm going to vote for the woman.
Oh.
And so I was waiting for my wife, and the lady and one of the poll people said, you know, how's it going? Good. And I couldn't remember who I was going to vote for, so I decided to vote for women whenever in doubt. And she said, really, that's interesting. I said, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she high-fived me, by the way. And I said, I've seen how the men do it. I said, yeah. Not impressed, not a big fan. What the hell? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, probably most men would probably just vote for the man if they didn't have a judgment. But I thought, let's vote for the woman. And I also was thinking, well, I'm going to be talking to you about this very strong mm-hmm. female character today. Obviously, you know, I would vote for Anne Hartford for pretty much anything. I would like to see her running more things. Which brings me to, and I think we've talked about this before, when I read the books, I picture Anne Hartford as Cynthia Crock.
Oh,
I just, maybe it's because we've had this content.
Yeah.
But I visualize her as looking like you.
Wow.
I hear her speaking in your voice. And I wonder, I mean, is there any part of you that, you know, projects that you'd like to have been this character? This would be, you know,
wow,
the matriarch, the business owner, the whole thing.
Yeah. You know, I have a lot of years in the corporate world. And I reported to an executive for a while who said, you're just not willing to step into your own potential. You know, you could run things if you wanted to. But I think I always had this need to have more of a world than work and then the corporate power. So I wouldn't say she's me, but I would say that she deals with some things probably like I do and some things very different, you know, because I'm conscious about not just having her trying to look beyond my own perspective. But yeah, thank you. I don't have any problem with that.
Good. And then I'm also wondering, I don't know, the book's been out a couple of weeks now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is it too soon to ask if you've been getting feedback from, you know, your readers and what they've been saying, pro and con, about the wrap-up to the series?
What I've I've been doing a few readings and such. I'll start doing book clubs more in October. So I probably will expect to get more feedback there. The feedback I'm getting is some of the things you've been saying is like, tell us this isn't the end, or, we want to see Anne step forward into like the next stage. So, I put a lot of years of my life into this, and there are a lot of projects sitting on the desk right now. But no, I haven't received too much beyond that at this point.
Right. And you know, when you write a series like this, at any point, maybe at the beginning or maybe at the middle, for example, mm-hmm. did you ever set down any rules for yourself about these things can happen, these things cannot happen? This is, you know, this is what's going on in this world and this is what's not? Or, you know, did you just...
Yeah. No, I did. I did some of that. And one of the things I tried to do was to make sure that the world was more diverse. And I think there's a little bit of a prudish element that got imposed on this world at the time that that all hell broke loose. I said that there would be no nuclear war, and that there wasn't going to and I knew that I was going to take this shift to being the global corporations displacing some of the government power. So that eliminated some of that global war kind of stuff that could happen. I decided not to deal with things like nuclear proliferation. There were more topics I decided not to move to, but I don't know if that helps much.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I'm not trying to second guess you, but yeah. I'm thinking that on the nuclear issue, if you allow a nuclear bomb or a nuclear mm-hmm. war, nuclear proliferation, it's kind of the easy way out. That doesn't force the characters to deal with their problems. That just said, oh, we'll just drop a bomb on our problems and that will solve everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, if you were to push it to a next book that where you have more control, even more control by the corporations, might they not get into some of that place to somehow gain more power? I mean, if you have two energy companies, will there only be one at the end? I don't know. See, we're talking about the next book, which isn't probably going to happen for a while, but yeah.
Oh, folks, she just said for a while. Okay, you heard it. Yeah. I don't know how big the market out there is for people waiting for more books from Ashwood, but she said for a while. She didn't say it'll never happen.
Happen. Okay. Okay. Fair.
Mark this.
We'll set that door open a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So we've kind of beat around the bush a little bit about whether maybe some of these characters could go out and. Mm-hmm. And Carrie, I think that they could. There's a lot of characters in here, whether
yeah.
it be the younger ones or the older ones, you know.
Right.
Or
it could be interesting to see, you know, in a future book, the younger ones, because you'd have a chance then to kind of see their perspectives on what Anne did in her life, or what is she still doing? Because this is not a world where you retire.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Anne lives through the end of this book? See, now we weren't going to give anything away.
Oh, okay. Well, someone dies, but it's not her. we'll do that. This book is kind of Anne's hero's journey to some extent. Yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
Okay. And how did we kind of wind down here? How did mm-hmm. committing to a series of books like this change your life, it changed your outlook on writing fiction, and, mm-hmm. and just alter your plan over the last 6 years?
Right. You know, when I agreed to do a trilogy, when my publisher asked that, it at that time it kind of seemed like, oh, great, now I know what I'm going to be doing. You know, there was this kind of like, oh, good, there's going to be more than one book and then it became more work after that to some extent. I mean, you know, actually, and I learned a lot. I mean, I learned a lot about managing plot and about thinking, not outlining, but thinking in the future about how the writing would go. But it's also taken a lot of time and energy. So I'm pretty pleased to kind of say, at least for some period of time, that I have other characters living in my office.
And were you ever sorry that you made this long-term commitment?
I'm not sorry I made it, but I think I wish I had made it over a longer period of time. So instead of saying I'll do this within a 5-year period, I would have given myself some breathers to get other work done or to do some other things.
All right. So before I ask you the final question about what's next, and I know that there's a manuscript on your desk, what else is on your desk? Is there anything on your desk that you could show people kind of what's surrounding you? Anything that means
something
to you?
Well, you know that there's, let's see. Oh no, I can't. My office is an absolute disaster right now. What's on my desk right now is there was a state grant that I applied for to do a memoir about my great grandmother, who supposedly was a Native American, an Oneida woman. Yeah. So I have a lot of research pile on her. I've been working with a genealogist on that. And then the first proofs of the next book are another corner of my desk.
Can you wave those at us?
Like
can you show us what that looks like without giving anything away?
Oh no, it won't give anything away. This is what it's looking like right now.
All right.
You couldn't see anything quickly in that. So that's what's on the desk right now.
Cool.
And then some reading. I'm actually trying to read more again, which, you know, as a writer, reading and writing are just hand in hand. But oftentimes you find yourself reading magazines because you don't have the time to really indulge in a book. Mm. Yeah.
And so does the new book have a title?
It has kind of a working title of What She Really Wants.
Oh, good luck with that. What She Really Wants. That's not a book. That's an encyclopedia.
No, it's not going to be that long.
And not only is it an encyclopedia, it has no end. Sorry. I've now pissed off my women viewers twice.
Well, it could, you know, the same thing could be said about What He Really Wants. So it's kind of a gender neutral statement, right?
But I'm not writing a book called What He Really Wants.
Yeah. Business books.
Anyway, What He Really Wants, it's just one thing. It's like, it's not even a short story.
Oh. Oh.
Oh. Oh. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it now. All right. Time for Mr. Media to wrap it up, I think, on that note.
Okay.
He gets into further trouble. Folks, you can find the final book in Cynthia Crock's Ashwood trilogy, Leaving Ashwood. It follows Ashwood and Harvesting Ashwood in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you've seen the show before, you know how this works. If you're watching on MrMedia.com, just below the video, maybe over there, is the cover of the book. You click on it right now. You can get it delivered via drone. Lots of drones in
yes.
Cynthia Crock stories. You get it via drone from Amazon in about 30 minutes or less, or you can have it delivered in a day or two if you're willing to wait. It's also it is available as an ebook.
Yes, it's on Kindle.
Right,
yeah.
So you can get it instantly to your Kindle. So do that. Great price.
Thank you.
You want to give out a website for people to get more information?
Sure. My website is cynthiacrock.com. And all kinds of good stuff there. And I do a blog that you'll see also on the website. So feel free.
And I know that you're on Twitter and you're on Facebook.
C_Crock, K-R-A-A-C-K.
Excellent. Well, I can't believe we're at the end of three conversations about these three books.
I'll have to do something to get your attention again.
It won't be difficult. I'm sure whatever you do, we'll have you back.
Okay, great.
It's been a great pleasure reading the books and getting to know you. And thank you once again for joining us on Mr. Media.
Okay, thank you.
Oh. Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk, and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said that they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. Hey, these are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot.
Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
The Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights. This is Adam and Acid to the Extreme.
So, I'm sorry, did you ever see the film Rubber?
I've seen Flubber.
I've heard of Rubber. Isn't that about like a tire or something? Like,
it is. Dude, Adam, you got to watch this movie. I'm serious.
Rubber?
It's so great. It's about a serial killer that is a tire. You know, kind of like Christine was a car. It's a tire.
And how much LSD was the director on when he...
I don't know. But it's great because what happens without giving anything away, the tire just kind of rolls into place, very sinister, and there's the person in the background. This was a highly entertaining movie. And the greatest thing, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but there's a scene where the local sheriff has got all his deputies together. He's describing this tire, and one of the deputies goes... Is he black?
Right here on the Realm Network.